I'm actually going to start on 1 Samuel 2. I'm just going to summarize, because I don't obviously want to take too much time on this one, but that's the story of Hannah. If you want to read it, you can obviously read it while I talk. But basically, Hannah is the mother of Samuel, obviously who the book is about. And in 1 Samuel 2, it starts off with Hannah visiting Shiloh, which is like a holy place, with her family, her husband, her husband's other wife, and their children, and probably quite a large household. They seem like quite wealthy people. And every year at Shiloh, they would go and they would make sacrifices. They would meet with the priests. They'd have, like, probably similar to Christmas. I don't know. It seems like that kind of gathering from when I was reading it. But in 1 Samuel 2, this particular year was very difficult for Hannah, and that was because she wasn't able to have children. It actually says that God had closed her womb, but her husband's second wife could. She had many children, and she let Hannah know how inadequate she was, and it was a very difficult, when you read it, it's very emotive. So I would definitely recommend reading it. But anyway, so this particular year, Hannah's in the feast. She doesn't want to eat. She doesn't want to participate. She doesn't want to be there. So she actually leaves. And as she leaves, she's praying to God. And she's just saying, look, remember me. Remember what I've asked for. You know, give me this son. If you give me a son. Sorry, it's quite an emotional bit. If you give me a son, I will give him back to you. I will offer him to you as a child to be raised by the priests at Shiloh, essentially, which is a huge, huge commitment. And anyway, there was a bit of an interaction with Eli where he assumed she was drunk. And she was like, no, I'm not. I'm honest. Like, I'm just at my wit's end. And then God said, okay, I will open your womb. She goes back. She returns from Shiloh with her family. And she conceives, and, well, obviously her husband is involved as well, but they conceive, and 9 months later Samuel is born. And this, obviously, this is essentially 1 Samuel is the story about his influence on the whole nation of Israel. And when you read through it, if she had not prayed that prayer, Samuel would not have existed. She would not have donated him to the priesthood to raise. And Israel, as a nation, would have had a very different future. They may not have had a future. We will never know. But I'm just going to read her prayer. So this is, she kept him with her until he was weaned. So I presume he was about two-ish. And then she, true to her word, she gave him over at Shiloh to Eli to raise. And he spent his entire childhood being raised to essentially serve God. And this is her prayer. So I'm just going to read this briefly and then I'll move on to the bit I'm sort of supposed to speak on. So this is 1 Samuel 2, and this is her prayer specifically. So it says, my heart rejoices in the Lord. In the Lord my horn is lifted high. My mouth boasts over my enemies, for I delight in your deliverance. There is no one holy like you, Lord. There is no one besides you. There is no rock like our God. Do not keep talking so proudly or let your mouth speak such arrogance, for the Lord is a God who knows, and by him deeds are weighed. The bow of the warriors are broken, but those who stumbled are armed with strength. Those who are full hire themselves out for food, but those who are hungry no more. She who was barren has borne 7 children, but she who has had many sons pines away. The Lord brings death and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and he rises up. The Lord sends property and wealth. He humbles and he exalts. He rises the poor from the dust and he lifts the needy from the ash. He seats them with princes and makes them inherit the throne of honor. For the foundations of the earth are the Lord's, and to them he has set the world. He will guard the feet of his faithful servants, but the wicked will be silenced in the place of darkness. It is not by strength that one prevails. Those who oppose the Lord will be broken. The Most High will thunder from heaven, and the Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of the anointed. Can you pass me a tissue, please? I'm like dripping. There is one behind. Thanks. I didn't expect to get so emotional. I didn't when I was preparing it, but who knows? Emotions have their own rules. But yeah, I just wanted mainly to emphasize the last bit, because when I was reading it, I just thought it was really, really interesting that she would say something like, he will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed, when she's in a time when they didn't have a king. There were nations around them who had kings, but she was an Israelite. They had judges at this time and for a long time afterwards, until her child was an adult. So that really struck me, which is why I wanted to read the whole thing so you get the whole context. But yeah, just put a pin in the last bit for me. So as Samuel grows up, obviously we've gone over a lot of this, but as he grows up, he hears the voice of God, he's an obedient steward, and he follows in Eli's footsteps. Eli was, from all accounts, a good man, but he did not raise his children well, and they could not follow him because they weren't good enough. So when it came time for someone to take over, Samuel was anointed by God to do that and to take the place of Eli as essentially the judge. And it says in the passage that he was the steward and the judge of the nation of Israel in its totality, all of it, all tribes, up until he was an old man. So when he was an old man, again, it was time for someone to take over. And unfortunately, Samuel's sons were also not good enough to take over. If you read the passage, it says they were corrupt, they were known to take bribes, they were not good enough. So when he should have retired, if a priest can retire, when he was getting ready to find his successor, his sons were not in a place that they should have been, and they were not ready to take over. And the people of Israel said, I don't want these people to lead us. These men we know are corrupt. We don't want them. We want a king. And Samuel was like, no, you're not having a king. We don't need a king. We don't need a king. We've had judges forever. We don't need a king. God, why do they want a king? And God said, look, it's not about you, Samuel. It's about me. They want to put someone in my position, and they can. He was like, right, fine. They asked again and again. It said, I think they asked three times, and they said, we want a king, three times. And then Samuel said, okay, God has said you can have a king. These are the rules, though. This is what he'll do. I'm warning you now. He's going to want taxes. He's going to take your best fighters. He's going to take your land if he wants it, because he's going to be king. And they were like, yep, that's fine. We'll take it. So he wrote the rules of the kingship down, and it says he put them in the Ark of the Covenant. So they're in there now. It's too late, they've said. God was good in that he did designate Saul. So he did say, look, they've asked for a king. I've said it's okay. This man is a good king. Well, he was goodish. This is the man who you should anoint. So then Samuel does, he goes down, he chooses Saul, and he says, look, God has anointed you as king. And actually, at that point, obviously we hear a lot about Saul's cowardice later on, but when he was anointed, Samuel says that, so he anoints him with the horn of oil, which was mentioned again by his mum, Hannah. And it says that Saul was filled with the Spirit, and he even prophesied. So he was full, he was ready, and then it was at his coronation, when it's time to actually step up and do it, that's when he hid. That's when he was like, oh, actually, this is kind of a big deal. But he was ready, and he was anointed, and he was prepared, but he did falter a little bit when it came time to actually, you know, do the job. But anyway, Saul was 30 when he was anointed as king, and he ruled for 42 years. So he, you know, it was a fair chunk of time. And again, just I want to recap on the 1 Samuel 13, verse 13. Basically, this is the story where he is ready for the army with the Philistines. He's all prepared. His army is arrayed, ready to fight, and then nothing happens for about a week. And his army starts to just disappear and trickle away. And instead of, like, being the commander that he's supposed to be, and instead of being a good leader that people will follow and people will stick around, he gets scared. And he decides to step in to the position that is designated to a priest. So it got to the seventh day, and he was meant to do a burnt offering, or Samuel was meant to do a burnt offering so that the battle would go well. Now, Samuel was delayed. He didn't turn up on the seventh day. And instead of either praying and asking God, what is the next step? What should I do? Or waiting a bit longer for the person whose job it was to do the sacrifice, he basically says, let's just do it now. And he asks the other priests to bring him the burnt offering. He sets up the altar. And he probably does exactly what Samuel would have done actions-wise. He probably even says the same prayers. But it didn't go well. So I'm going to read this bit, actually. Because this basically, as the burnt offering finishes, Samuel turns up, of course. So... This is the bit where he does his reaction, essentially. So yeah, he waited for 7 days and the time set by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and Saul's men began to scatter. So he said, bring me the burnt offering and the fellowship offerings, and Saul offered up the burnt offering. Just as he finished making the offering, Samuel arrived, and Saul went to greet him. What have you done? Asked Samuel. Saul replied, when I saw that the men were scattering and that you did not come at the set time, and that the Philistines had assembled at Mishmash, I thought, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not sought the Lord's favor. So I felt compelled to offer the burnt offering. You know, it's never Saul's fault, is it? It's always someone else's fault. You didn't arrive in time. The men were scattering. The army, you know, it's not like, well, I'm so sorry. I should have stepped up. Anyways, Samuel says, you have done a foolish thing. You have not kept the command of the Lord your God. If you had, he would have established your kingdom over Israel for all time. But now your kingdom will not endure. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart and appointed him ruler of his people because you have not kept the Lord's command. So this is really serious, heavy, heavy stuff. Then Samuel left Gilgal and went up to Gibeah at Benjamin. So this is sort of, Saul made quite a few mistakes along the way. Some of them were redeemable, some of them weren't, but he could have established his line for generations. He could have had a family lineage that went on for hundreds of years or thousands of years, but he chose his pride over what was right. And the next example as well, again, I can't remember if you did this one or not, but... the next example of this is in 1 Samuel 14, verses 24 to 45. And this is when they're actually doing the battle. They're actually fighting. And the Saul can kind of see the tide turning a little bit. And he basically says the dumbest thing I've heard in a long time. He basically says, if anyone eats anything before we win this battle, he is cursed. Now, food is quite important. Food for an army of fighting men who are in the middle of a battle and who need sustenance and respite is quite important. And just when I was reading it, I was just like, why? So basically, he decided that he was going to, he uses this strong language. He was probably in the heat of the moment. He probably didn't think about the consequences. But he said, basically, if anyone eats anything before we win this battle, you're cursed. Which is a big deal, you know. Curses are not, you know, it's not like a little thing. And again, this was sort of spoke about a little bit about Jonathan didn't hear this. He didn't know that this was a thing that his dad had said. So when he was fighting the battle, the Philistines were on the run, and he had the gall to eat some honey because he was hungry. And it says in the passage that his eyes brightened and he felt better, he felt revived. And then he went on, and they won the battle. And then at the end, when they've won, Saul says, right, God's not speaking to me, so who's done something bad? I can't hear the voice of the Lord. Someone's done something, and it's not me. So must be someone else. And then they actually divided the people, and he did. I don't know how he worked it out. He was probably just like having a general feel for it. And then in the end, it says it came to him, and it came to Jonathan, and everyone else was sort of spared. And he said, well, it's not me, so it must be you. What did you do? This is his heir. This is his next in line, you know what I mean? And Jonathan says, well, honestly, you know, I didn't know that you'd said not to eat. I didn't know that you had made that declaration. So I did have some honey in the battle. You know, I was fighting and I was hungry. So it was me. And Saul, he says, right, well, I've given my word to God, so we have to put you to death. And then Jonathan, it didn't actually, I don't think it says his point of view, but he's probably in shock, to be honest, and battle fatigued, because they just fought all day. And the only reason that Saul did not kill his own son, the heir to his throne, after winning a battle, was because his advisors stepped in. His advisors said, absolutely not, you're not going to kill the warrior that's just basically won us this battle because he ate some honey. Like, literally, are you insane? Like, this, if you read it, it's quite funny. You could probably just imagine what they were thinking. Like, obviously, they've all been fighting all day. They've been waiting for weeks for this to happen. It's probably like the straw that broke the camel's back, and they were just like, right, that's it. Enough. You're not killing your own son because he ate some honey. You made a stupid declaration that you should not have made, and that is not his fault, essentially. Jonathan did not die. No thanks to Saul. Now, at the end of chapter 15, again, this is just the recap, so apologies. This is just the recap. At the end of chapter 15, Samuel has broken the news to Saul that the Lord has rejected him. But at this point, Samuel's like, right, God has declared this is the last straw. He's taking his favor from you. It's too late. This cannot be helped. And it says that Samuel mourns for Saul, because obviously he would have known him for 40 years. He would have been there throughout as advisor. He was there when he was 30, and he was there when he was anointed. So it did say he mourns for Saul. And then we jump to 1 Samuel 16, which is the bit I'm actually supposed to be preaching on. This isn't a huge one, so I feel like we could do it in 5 minutes. So this is after, so it says in at the end of 1 Samuel 15 that Samuel did not see Saul again. So he's rejected him. He said, look, the Lord has made his decision. Your days are numbered. Your lineage will not carry on. Your children will not inherit the throne. So 1 Samuel 16 verse 1, the Lord said to Samuel, how long will you mourn for Saul since I have rejected him as king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I am sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king. But Samuel said, how can I go? If Saul hears about it, he will kill me. The Lord said, take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Invite Jesse to the sacrifice and I will show you what to do. You are to anoint for me the one that I indicate. Samuel did what the Lord said, and when he arrived at Bethlehem, the elders of the town trembled when they met him. They said, Do you come in peace? Samuel replied, Yes, in peace. I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come to the sacrifice with me. Then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. When they arrived, Samuel saw, I'm going to assume this is Eliab, I don't know. I assume Eliab, and thought, Surely the Lord's anointed stands before the Lord. But the Lord said to Samuel, Do not consider his appearance or his height. Like, have you not learned from Saul, who was 2 foot above everyone else, or, you know, handsome? Come on. I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at things that the people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, The Lord has not chosen this one either. And then Jesse basically made all seven of his sons do this. All six of his sons do that. And the Lord has not chosen these. Then he says to Jesse, Are these all the sons that you have? Because he's probably getting a bit worried at this stage, to be honest. And then Jesse says, Oh, well, there is still the youngest, Jesse answered. He's tending the sheep. Didn't even remember to invite him to the party. Samuel said, Send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives. So they sent for him, and he had him brought in. He was glowing with health and had fine appearance and handsome features. Then the Lord said, Rise and anoint him. This is the one. So Samuel took the horn of the oil of the anointed and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. Samuel then went back to Ramah, which was his home with Hannah. And again, I just wanted to link back to the original last bit of the prayer. Because this is the second king that Samuel has anointed. The difference being that at this stage, they're not looking at someone who can tick a box, someone who can fill in a job role. They're looking at someone who has a good heart, a pure heart, and a heart for God. And that is the difference. It was very important, obviously, when looking at the first bit, the link between the two. This is probably maybe 70 years apart, but again, it's all really linked back to that prayer and that sacrifice that Hannah made when she gifted her firstborn for the future of this nation. There is a little bit more from verse 14, which basically is Saul on the opposite end of the spectrum. So it says that David had the Spirit of God. He was filled with the Lord's Spirit. And it says that God has now removed it from Saul. And he not only has he removed his spirit from Saul, but he has sent an evil spirit to torment him, basically. So the last bit, which I am going to read. So this is verse 19 I'm going to go from. 18. Saul basically said, look, I need someone who can play soothing music. I need someone who's good at soothing these demons that are tormenting me. And one of the servants answered, I have seen a son of Jesse of Bethlehem who knows how to play the lyre. He is a brave man and a warrior. He speaks well and is fine looking, and the Lord is with him. Then Saul sent messengers to Jesse and said, Send me your son David, who is with the sheep. So Jesse took a donkey and loaded the bread, the skin of wine, and the young goats and sent them with his son David to Saul. David came to Saul and entered his service. Saul liked him very much, and David became one of his armor bearers. Then Saul sent word to Jesse, saying, "Allow David to remain in my service, for I am pleased with him." Whenever the spirit from God came on Saul, David would take up his lyre and play, and then relief would come to Saul, for he would feel better and the evil spirit would leave him. I just think, like, David's been anointed. He knows he's going to be king. He knows that his future is to rule the country. And at this stage, it says he's a warrior. He's a grown man. Like, when you when you read, like, the children's stories, he's always depicted as, like, a 12-year-old and, like, scrawny little kid. But he's a grown man in this. It says he's a warrior. And you don't make a 12-year-old your armor bearer unless you want to lose. It says to me that David, he knows that his future is great, but he knows he's still got work to do before he gets there, and he knows that he's got to serve the current king until he's removed by God. He's not going to remove him himself, although he could, and there is temptation down the line, but he is prepared to play the lyre. He is prepared to be his armor bearer. He's prepared to step into the servant role until he's needed to step up. And that is, again, the difference in heart. And I know which one I would prefer to be honest. So yeah, it just that's where I'm going to leave it. I'm going to pray, obviously. Lord, give us servant hearts. Give us hearts like David. Give us hearts that are willing to bend and willing to serve until our time comes. If we are leaders, let us be leaders. If we are servers, let us be servers. But let us do it with the heart for you. And let us not just do the sacrifice because that's what we do on a Sunday morning. Let us do it because that's why we're here, and that's because we're doing it for you. And Lord, I just pray that we'll go into this week with that attitude, with the servant heart of David. Amen.